20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Happy Friday, Packers fans. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. As always, you can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for making Pack-A-Day part of your daily routine. We're here for you 365 days a year. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Of course, if you're on the YouTube channel, make sure to check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships as well. Speaking of which, shout out to Smiling Beagle for signing up for a YouTube membership. Smiling Beagle, appreciate that a ton. Thank you for all of your support. Great show for you today. These are some of my favorite shows that I get to do all year, whether it's when Green Bay actually drafts a player and doing the deep dives into the new prospects or new draft class that Green Bay has, or whether it's in free agency and when Green Bay actually signs a player to go and do the deep dive and look at all the tape and then go through the full scouting report and everything that I was able to see and kind of give you everything that you need to know about the player. So today, our deep dive on Aaron Banks and everything that you need to know about Aaron Banks. Before we get there, just a couple of really quick pieces of news and notes. Nate Hobbs officially signed with the Green Bay Packers. He will wear number 21. Love that jersey choice for him. He will speak with the media on Friday at noon. So if you're looking for his first introductory press conference, you will get that today, Friday at noon. Love the number 21. It is slightly worth noting here. We haven't had this happen this year yet, but as we're about to deep dive into Aaron Banks, it is slightly worth noting that he is not officially signed as of yet. You have to go through a physical and a variety of different things when you kind of get to town. We have seen some of these deals fall apart. It would be a nightmare scenario for Green Bay, I'm sure, where you've had him signed and you really probably missed out on the free agency period. If that were to happen, I'm obviously not speaking it into existence by any means, but just somewhat noteworthy that these deals are not finalized until they're finalized. We got the Nate Hobbs finalization on Thursday. Hopefully the Aaron Banks one is soon thereafter, but he is not yet officially signed, whereas Nate Hobbs now, in fact, is. There continues to be some whispers and rumblings as to whether or not maybe Aaron Rodgers could end up in Minnesota. Their quarterback situation has been very odd. They wanted to bring back Sam Darnold. They have not yet committed to J.J. McCarthy, which felt like it would be the obvious transition if they decided to go there. Maybe bringing back a Daniel Jones or somebody that could quote-unquote compete or maybe even take the reins for a couple weeks if need be. But this should have felt like J.J. McCarthy's job, but they have not anointed him that. They have not said that they plan to have him as the starter. And there's been whispers of Aaron Rodgers. Could they get Kirk Cousins back? Joe Flacco? Jameis Winston? Like, there have been all these different names, and the market is starting to just, dissipate. There's not a whole ton left there, but Aaron is still there. I said this on the live chat on the members Q&A on Thursday. There is something in my gut that legitimately tells me that Aaron's going to end up in Minnesota. Just the way that Minnesota's been so hush-hush about this entire process, that Rodgers isn't getting back to the Giants and the Steelers and is taking his time. It feels like there could be some behind-the-scenes chatter with maybe the Vikings and Aaron Rodgers. And wouldn't it just be very, Rodgers-esque to make this big splash, sign with the Minnesota Vikings? I don't know. Just a gut feel. If I were putting my money where my mouth was and predicting, I'd probably say Pittsburgh. I might even go retirement. I might even go Giants, before I get there, but there's this weird feeling inside of me that he does in fact end up a Minnesota Viking. We shall see. Who knows? Maybe he decides on Friday. Maybe he decides a week before the season starts. At this point, nothing would surprise me, but he is still out there. There is a lot of quarterbacks, or teams that need a quarterback waiting here to see what he's going to do, specifically the Giants and the Steelers. But, maybe Minnesota's involved in that as well. And how that carousel sort of ends up will be very interesting to see moving forward. Overall, it was a very quiet day in free agency on Thursday. One piece of news from a Packers standpoint, or at least, I guess, a wishful thinking Packers standpoint. Trey Hendrickson, the player that I think most fans, or at least some fans, want Green Bay to trade for. There does seem to be a continued, just desire from Trey Hendrickson to stay in Cincinnati. Whether or not they can make that work remains to be seen, but it is interesting. Hendrickson very much wants to stay with the Bengals. Now, the Bengals need some salary cap savings here and giving him a brand new huge deal may not work out that way. And they're going to pay Higgins and Chase, and they're just in a very weird situation. But that's one thing to keep an eye on. If you're hoping for Hendrickson, well, obviously he has to be traded. And if Hendrickson says, I want to stay in Cincinnati and they work something out, well, then that takes care of that situation in and of itself. So something to keep an eye on there as well. And with that, let's get into our Aaron Banks deep dive, everything that you need to know about Aaron Banks. Now, the first thing I'll say is at some point, just like I did this very similarly last year, I gave you my deep dive into Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney. And then later on, I went through and I graded every play of theirs. So my hope is at some point to go through and grade Aaron Banks on every play from 2024. As you can imagine, that does take time. This was a full tape study of 2024, but did not have the opportunity to go through and grade every one of those plays. This deep dive would not have come until, I don't know, probably June or July if that were the case. So I figured you would want that ahead of time. So this is the deep dive without my full grade on the player. If I had to guess, I think he's going to grade in the positive from this past year. I liked his tape a lot more going through it the second time. I did sort of a quick watch through my first time, and then now I got to watch it with more of a fine-tooth comb. And the more nuance that you see, the more that you really appreciate some of the aspects of his game, not looking at it through rose-tinted or in this case, green and gold-tinted glasses by any means. Try everything in my power not to do it. Just look at it from an objective point of view. And I think there's a really interesting, unique skill set here. And there's a lot to like about his game, things he can work on unequivocally, but we'll get through all of that in just a moment. As far as the profile goes, 6'5", 325. I mean, talk about looking the part. This is somebody who absolutely looks the part. He's 27 years old. He will turn 28 in September. That's somewhat noteworthy here. A lot of these players who are off of their first contract, sometimes, you know, if they were 21 years old when they were drafted, well, now they're 25. If they were 22, they're 26. He was 23, so he's 27 and about to turn 28 in September. When you sign a player to a four-year deal, that means if he plays it out, he'll be 28, 29, 30, and 31 in this four-year deal, which is a little bit different than if you're 25, 26, 27, 28, or 26, 27, 28, 29. His first two, you know, this year and next year will be 28 and 29, but then you get into that 30 age range pretty quick. And that's not necessarily the worst thing. A lot of really good guards play into that. Kevin Zeitler, who just signed a new contract on Thursday, not with Detroit, thankfully. He continues to play well into his 30s. So it's not like a deal breaker here, but it is a little bit noteworthy. Had a 7.19 relative athletic score coming out of college, including a 90th percentile vertical jump. That was his big one. Only a 48th percentile broad jump, 50th percentile 40 time, a 22nd percentile 10-yard split, which is very interesting, a 49th percentile short shuttle, and a 75th percentile three cone. Now, a couple things. His movement skills we're going to talk about a lot. At 325, a 75th percentile three cone and a 90th percentile vertical jump is freaky stuff. It may not have played out that way all the way around with the 10-yard split and the short shuttle only being the 49th percentile, but at 325 pounds, that dude was moving. And you will see as we go through this, he has some very freaky athletic traits as we get into our full scouting report. It is worth noting as well, from a position standpoint, he's obviously a guard. He is a left guard, and he played 5 snaps as a right guard his rookie season. Every snap since then has been at left guard. I think you could move him to right guard if you ever wanted to. I think he profiles just fine as a right guard. In fact, maybe even slightly better as a right guard. Actually, I don't know. They're about probably equal, but I don't know why you'd move him at this point when he's played 3 consecutive years as a starter at left guard. He's probably just a left guard at this point of his career. This was the draft profile from Lance Zierlein of NFL.com, who does a phenomenal job. I'm not going to go through all the strengths and weaknesses from him, but I'm just going to give you his actual draft profile. I'll also add to this, when he was coming out from Notre Dame, I loved his tape in college. I thought he was going to be a plug-and-play left guard. He went mid-second, if I remember correctly, mid-second round, and I thought he was going to even potentially sneak into the end of the first or go very early in the second round. Again, when you see his strength, his size, his movement ability, sort of the total package, played very well at Notre Dame, I liked him a lot coming out. So, you know, very interesting draft profile. And this is the full sort of notes from Lance. a mass of humanity who's able to cast his frame upon opponents and win with pierce eyes at times. Banks can get a little lax with certain elements of technique and footwork, but tends to counter that with his frame and strength. His core and base are rock steady, and he's rarely jostled by contact. He can create momentum with his size as a run blocker, but he's not a great bender and lacks explosiveness into contact. Pass protection will get a little choppy against athletic interior rushers and twist games that force him to make quick slides to cut off his edges, and he has the anchor to stall bull rushers all day long. Banks has some physical limitations, but should be fine as a potential early starter and day two, rounds 2 to 3 pick for a physical running game. That was Lance's profile coming out of college. A lot of that stuff is, you're going to find out, carrying over into his NFL game. This is Brandon Thorne. I read this the other day, but I'm going to read it one more time. Brandon Thorne is, to me, the, you know, outside of our own Mike Wall, obviously, just as somebody who specifically covers offensive linemen and focuses on one thing, he's fantastic at breaking down offensive line play. He had Aaron Banks as this was his profile going into free agency. All right. Banks is a big body, 6'5", 325, with 33 1/8-inch arms at left guard. He made 43 starts over his first four seasons, including 16, 14, and 13 over the last 3 years since becoming a full-time starter. Banks performed at a functional level last season, but dealt with a rash of injuries that included a broken finger, concussion, and an MCL injury. On film, Banks plays with an upright style and shows mediocre recovery skills that get him out-leveraged and leave him susceptible to clean losses and pass protection. Banks consistently looks for work when uncovered and uncorks on adjacent defenders to keep the pocket clear. He pairs solid initial quickness with heavy hands and a physical demeanor in the run game to get to his spots on time, cover up, and wall off defenders. However, he struggles to consistently sustain blocks late in the rep due to getting slipped. Banks is a functional option as a starting guard and could fill in as a fifth best starter on a good unit and potentially serve as a fourth best starter on a younger, less experienced group. So that was Brandon Thorne's take on Aaron Banks. I'm a little bit higher on that after watching the tape, but a lot of what Aaron said, or sorry, a lot of what Brandon says about Aaron on the positives and the negatives are unequivocally true. I don't disagree with any of his actual breakdown of what his strengths and weaknesses are. I think he's better than that. I don't think he's a fourth or fifth lineman. I think he's probably more of like a third offensive lineman, but on a five-man unit, like the third best. But we can squabble about that as much as we want. It doesn't really matter. All that matters is how he ultimately plays in Green Bay. From a PFF standpoint, in 2021, he played 5 snaps. They gave him a 56.9 grade. In 2022, 1,146 snaps had a 59.5 grade. In 2023, 1,042 snaps with a 52.8 grade. And in 2024, 775 snaps with a 65.4 grade. His pass block grades, he did not have any when he had his 5 snaps in his rookie season, a 61.0 grade, a 50.2 grade, and a 60.5 grade. Remember, 60 is average. So NA, average, below average, average is what you're looking at there. His run block grades, his rookie year, 57.1, 57.2 in his second year, 55.8 in his third year, 68.9 this past year. So slightly below average, slightly below average, slightly below average, and above average this past year. From a pass block win rate standpoint, he has 1,683 career pass pro snaps. Again, this is all per PFF. He has 1,592 opportunities to actually block and have success on a play, 96 pressures given up, 3 sacks only, which is a really unbelievable number. He has gotten lucky on some of that, and some quarterback avoidance has been a huge piece of that, but still only allowed 3 sacks in 3 full-time seasons. A 96.9% pass block efficiency, but does have 19 penalties in those 3 seasons as well. In 2024, he had 447 pass block opportunities, only gave up 1 sack, 4 hits, and 20 hurries, which was 25 pressures in total, a 97.1 pass block efficiency, and only 5 penalties this past year. All right, so a little bit better, although he did miss a few games, right? If you're wondering what that 97.1% pass block efficiency means, Elgton Jenkins last year for Green Bay was at 98.2%. Zach Tom was at 97.1%. So Zach Tom, 97.1, and Banks was at 97.1. Sean Ryan was at 96.9. Josh Myers was at 96.9. Rashid Walker was at 96.4. And Jordan Morgan was at 96.3. So 97.1 would have tied him for second in Green Bay in pass block efficiency with Zach Tom behind only Elgton Jenkins. He has fought through injuries in his career. In 2024, as mentioned, MCL concussion, also had a thigh injury to go along with the finger injury as well, missed four total games. In 2023, had a toe injury and a hip injury, missed two total games. And in 2022, had an ankle injury and missed one game. He has yet to play a full 17-game season in the NFL. His rookie year just didn't play that much. And then again, one game in 22, two games in 23, and four games missed in 2024. All right, let's get to the actual scouting report. These are my notes that I took in my handy-dandy notebook, and I'm going to bring to you right here, right now. I've got 10 positives, 11 negatives, and then we'll kind of give you an overall idea of who he is as a player. Within those 10 positives, there's little offshoots as well, so there's actually more on my list of positives. Movement skills is number one. It's interesting because, again, when you look at the raw athletic scores and like the short shuttle and some things like that from the combine, I was actually expecting it to be better. He has very unique movement skills, especially for 6'5", 325. I don't think his testing numbers did him justice. I think he is a better athlete than those would even indicate. His ability to pull in the running game and just move all around, wherever you need him to go. There were multiple plays where he pulled out to the left side from guard, pulling all the way out, as you will see in San Francisco's offense quite a bit. He at 6'5", 325, he's pulling out there with ease. In those, you know, pass plays where the guard pulls out and you've got the defensive end unblocked and the defensive end is crashing down and the guard's got to pick him up. Multiple plays, he gets to his spot, not only walls off the defender, but on like one of the very first plays from 2024 that's on tape, he walls off that defender and then just eliminates him entirely. So like really good stuff there. His movement skills to the second level are really impressive. He will shoot to the second level, find a linebacker, and have the ability to eliminate that linebacker as well. Wherever you need to get him to, he pretty much can get to at 6'5", 325. I'm going to repeat that one more time because it is worth noting. He can get anywhere he needs to at 6'5", 325. Maybe my favorite play, and if you want to go check out my Twitter page, I posted a minute plus long video of this play and broke it down and gave the full breakdown over there on Twitter. There's a play where he's at left guard, obviously, and there's a nose tackle over center. And it's a sweep play to the right. And they pull the center, they pull another player, they get outside, and they're trying to create a big alleyway on the right side. There's a seal here and a seal here. You get the point. His responsibility on that play is to go from the far left guard position to over center where the nose tackle is not going to get blocked by the center at all. Not only not blocked, but not touched by the center. Not even a fingertip from the center to that nose tackle. The center is just going to pull right away and get to the outside so he can get to his spot. It is Aaron Banks's job at 6'5", 325, to go from left guard all the way around the nose tackle, a full gap like plus over, and seal that nose tackle before the nose tackle can explode into the backfield and stop that run for like a 5-yard loss. If Aaron Banks does not get there, the play is dead on arrival. It is done with, over with. There's nothing that you're going to be able to do. So it is paramount that he can get there. Man, he fires off the ball, shoots all the way to his right, gets even with the nose tackle almost immediately. And then it's like an almost impossible task to seal him, but gets more than enough of him and gets him to just have to focus on Aaron Banks, where the running back is easily able to get around. The nose tackle had no opportunity to make that play. And the running back goes for, I don't know, 30 yards on the play because those other two players were able to pull out, get on their blocks, and it's a beautifully executed play. And it is a 5-yard loss if Aaron Banks cannot find a way to get to that nose tackle in time. That is a rare ability at left guard. You can sometimes get there, center puts a hand on him and maybe stalls him for a second and then goes out to pull. There was nothing like that. I don't know, maybe it was supposed to be that way and the center's just like, screw it, I'm getting out to pull. And maybe they just know how good Aaron Banks is at doing that as well. So that's why they didn't do it. Because usually we'll see center get a hand out there, just delay him for a second. So the guard has that, you know, little bit of opportunity to kind of wiggle in there. No, center pulls right away. He gets all the way over to that gap immediately, gets enough of the nose tackle, disrupts him, and makes it so that running back can get outside. Huge pickup because Banks was able to do that. As far as going to the second level, there's another play. This one was really, really fun as well. I wish I could show you these. You guys probably know my stance on it as of now, but I wish I could show you it. There's a play where they call for Banks to get to the second level and get to the linebacker. On this part, usually, and again, in these scenarios, you'll see a quick double team, you know, whether it's duo or whatever it might be, you'll see a quick double team and, you know, he'll help on the, you know, if it's the center that's making that block or if it's a tackle, he'll help on one of the blocks and then get to the second level and attack that linebacker. Well, in this play, they're trying to get outside. The linebacker's lined up in like basically strict middle. And he knows that as soon as that toss play, I don't know if it was a toss or I think it was a toss play. But as soon as that toss goes, what is that linebacker? That linebacker is going to beeline it to that side. And if that linebacker doesn't get blocked, he again is going to shut down that play. So Aaron Banks is not going to go out and help on the initial block, but he's got to find a way to get to that second level and cut off that linebacker before he can go make that play, you know, to the outside and stop that toss play. Well, he is like a running back at his size that gets through the hole, tiny, shoots through there. And then the beautiful thing was readjusted in real time to what the linebacker was doing. And then recreated his angle, got there, walled him off, and completely took him out of the play. Like, again, the quick, not only like, I see so many times, I cannot tell you how many times I see it where a guard gets to, and Banks has this on tape too, by the way. He's not infallible. He's not perfect. There's plenty of plays like this on tape where the guard gets to the second level and then the linebacker will make a, because think of it this way, right? The running play is behind you if you're a guard. Aaron Banks and any other offensive line, they don't have the ability to look behind him and be like, well, where's the running back going, right? So the linebacker has this huge advantage, or the safety, the defensive back, whoever it is, where they know where the running back is going. The guard does not. So it might be a toss play to the left, but how many times have we seen it where the running back has to cut it back right? So Banks is in, or any offensive lineman is going to get to the second level. And what's the linebacker going to do? They're going to juke them as if they are going to go back inside. And as the offensive lineman, you basically have to react to that, because what if there was a cutback or the running back had to like readjust? Like you have to read that linebacker as if they're going to go and get the running back. So you'll see the linebacker give that move, that fake inside. The offensive lineman adjusts. And by that time, we're not talking about a corner flipping his hips here, right? That guard is not going to be able to change directions and get to that spot. So the linebacker will give that juke, the offensive lineman will overcommit, and then that linebacker will go make the play. And the guard can't do, or the offensive lineman cannot do anything about it. Well, in this particular play, shoots through the gap, gets there in a hurry, gets there before the linebacker can get, linebacker kind of gives him a little bit of juke. He then takes off to the sideline and he readjusts in real time, retakes a better angle to it, and cuts him off and seals him and annihilates him from the play. Just, again, some very unique movement stuff. We're on compliment number one here, by the way. The overall movement skills, the ability to pull, get to the second level, you know, do whatever you need him to. He is so good at it from a movement ability, especially at his size. And the other thing that I'll say here too is he consistently gets to his spot. Wherever you need him, whether it is that over-the-nose tackle play, whether it's on a pull, whether it's just getting a double team and getting to the second level, whatever it is, he is going to get to his spot. And that is usually you talk about it as like job number one for an offensive line, but if you can get to your spot before the defensive lineman can engage you, it is advantage you all day, every day. You are set, you're ready. The defensive lineman doesn't have a first step on you or a bad angle on you. You're to your spot, you're where you want to be. Now you can engage and start that fight, and you're at the advantage because you got there first. So he will get to his spot in a hurry and he will beat you there and he will get ready to go block you. And that's exactly, again, a huge aspect of winning in the NFL along the offensive line. all great movement skills. That's kind of, again, the number one. Number two, he does a really great job with double teams. So this is, again, something that is easy to take for granted. There are offensive linemen that are really, really bad at this, and they either don't really care about the initial block or they don't care about the second block as much. You have to go and you have to help on that double team and then get off of it, get to your second level, or maybe just maintain the double team. He's good at both of it. Any sort of double team blocks that he's involved in usually go very, very well. Whether it's a block and then getting to the second level, or whether those two are just going to annihilate somebody, whatever it might be, he has the ability to do it. And he plays it in an aggressive way. So anytime there's a double team and Banks is involved, it usually ends up in a good situation for the offense. Very quick first step, which is why I was surprised that his 10-yard split was so bad. But again, some of these guys are just not track athletes and they're football athletes. He is a football athlete. There's a little bit of snap timing to his game. So you can tell he's just timing it up perfectly. Not anywhere near, Juwan Taylor from the Chiefs or whatever, like anything egregious. It is just really, really smart timing, which is, again, you want to see your offensive linemen have the tricks of the trade. Every little thing helps along the trenches, and he has some of those things in abundance. Chris Jones, one-on-one, best defensive tackle in football. Jones beat him, I think, probably just once, if I remember correctly, on a pass rush play. It wasn't, again, an awful loss by any means. And Chris Jones is going to get his. Two plays in the run game where Banks just took Chris Jones and completely moved him out of the play. Talking about the ultimate defensive tackle in the NFL. Nobody tougher to block than him. And Aaron Banks took him and not just like kind of won the rep, moved him out of the play. That's the type of ability that Aaron Banks has. Flattens defenders going low. You will see a couple different occasions where a defender will try to get kind of lower on the play and Banks will take him and just rip him and throw him to the ground. Pancake him. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I said, is that a hole? No. Nope. Totally legal, totally good to do, doesn't get called, and just seeing him rip them down because they're off balance and then pancake them on top. Again, you just love seeing that. You don't see a lot of that from Green Bay offensive linemen. He's going to bring a little bit of that to the table. You don't see this consistently. He's not this big mauling, complete, just destructive force on the offensive line, but you will see pancakes, drive blocks, playing through the whistle, and a little bit of nasty from time to time. Personally, I would like to see a little bit more of it because he has it in him. And if you have it, just continue to use it. But you will see more of it from him than I think you will from any other Packers offensive lineman. Rashid will play with a little bit from time to time. Sean Ryan will play with a little bit from time to time. Jenkins is not really that nasty guy. Zach Thomas certainly not. So you'll see it from those guys, but he's going to add a little bit of an element to that, to this offensive line. Can play in a variety of different schemes. If all of a sudden there's a different scheme next year, or if Matt LaFleur wants to do something different week to week, he can play in just about everything because he's got the size, the strength, the power, and the movement ability. And I'll just say he fits phenomenally in Matt LaFleur's scheme, which is a reason why I think they really wanted him in this offense. Showed some ability to move some bodies in the red zone. That's something that Green Bay's offensive line has really been missing, and he can get players moving. And that's what you need. You need to get that space created. And he has the ability to do that. And we'll talk about how he fits in this line a little bit more in just a moment. Has all the traits physically, and I think even mentally as well, to do a really great job along the offensive line. Height, weight, speed, the profile, looks the part, movement ability, strength, all, it's all there. Total package is all there. I'm not saying he's the total package as a left guard, but from a gift standpoint, he has got everything that he needs in abundance. And last but not least, takes really smart angles as well. When he is getting out in space, it's not just this poor angle or it's not with intention. He's got intentionality with it. And he takes really, really smart angles to get to where he needs to go. All right, let's get to the negatives. Those are all the positives, of course. The negatives, as we talked about, he has had some injury issues. Nothing, super concerning, but injuries in every year. And again, has not finished out a full 17-game season. He's probably a guard only, and he might be a left guard only. So Green Bay loves their versatility. He should be able to move to right guard if you ever need him to, but he's probably left guard, right guard only. No real tackle ability, no center ability. He's got two spots and you probably just want to keep him at left guard. The big thing is Brandon Thorne touched base on is just maintaining blocks. And what I kind of came to the conclusion of here is the hands are going to dictate the story for Aaron Banks because he can get anywhere he needs to go. He's going to get to his spot first. He gets off the ball well. He's going to beat the defensive lineman. And then it all comes down to hand placement and just hand usage. When he gets beat a lot of times, he'll get his hand swiped away and or he loses the hand battle and they get inside on him and he loses that because of it. Or he gets to his spot, does everything he needs to do, wins the rep up until the point where they engage and he has the advantage, but his hands are all over the place. You'll see him get outside. You'll see him, again, just maybe get his hands knocked away. If he gets his hands inside and he needs to do a better job of getting latched on, if he needs to work on his grip strength or whatever it might be, just remember, you get inside in those pads, you can grab a hold in there. So if he can get that grip strength going inside, everything else he has. And the big thing is just maintaining that block because he's doing all the hard work and literal heavy lifting up until the point where you get there. Now just control that dude. And if he can start doing that, it's going to be a total game changer for him, but it has not been something consistent for him. And just, you want to see him sustain those blocks a little bit better. He'll lower his head and get caught leaning, and then he's off balance, and then they can use that momentum against him. Some penalty issues, but only 5 this past year. Identifying who to block. So sometimes when teams use a lot of eye candy, he will start like kind of just dancing his eyes around a little bit, and then all of a sudden, he's responsible for a guy and that guy beats him because he's kind of getting his eyes caught in the other direction. So just identifying who he's supposed to block and then going out and blocking that person and not falling for some of the other eye candy, he can do a little bit better job with that. He will get off balance. He plays too high. He needs to get a little bit lower. When you talk about losing some of those hand battles and things like that, he's opening up his chest, right? The higher you play, the more your chest is open, the more surface area is open for other offensive linemen, the more that they can get inside of you and get their hands inside of your chest plate and start controlling you. And then that's where they can rip you, shed you, throw you to the ground, like whatever you need to do. That's not where you want to be. So you want to play a little bit lower, give them less of a target area to get inside, and then obviously use your quickness and your hand fighting to win that battle. But if he could play a little bit lower to the ground, get a little bit lower in his stance, I think that would correct some of the issues that are out there as well. I'm sure that's going to be something that Luke Butkus and company are really working with on, improving, or will work with him on improving moving forward. Slow to react on twists and stunts. Again, this kind of comes with the eye candy stuff of, you know, he'll get kind of caught just looking at like what's going on. And then again, sometimes he gets caught with that. So I think he can do better with those. Surprisingly slow recovery time for all his great movement skills. You would expect if he kind of like got beat, he'd be able to recover, but he does not. He does not recover very well. Don't really have a reason why. I would expect the movement ability to be able to again get him back in the play, but it kind of doesn't, which is again a little bit interesting. And then last but not least, you always are wanting just a little bit more. And what I want to say to him, you know, is like, one, what are you waiting for? You've got everything. You can literally go out and be a top 5-7 guard in this league, at least. Go do it. I want to see Banks go out. And instead of him just playing, I want to see him go out and dictate terms. He's got that nasty when he wants it. He's got the physicality. He's got the movement. Like, be a little bit better with your hands. Be a little bit better with your eye discipline. But he can be as good as he wants. And I think if he just goes out and dictates terms a little bit more and says, you know what, I'm the better player here. I'm going to be the one that's dictating to you. I think it would change a little bit of how he plays and just how often he wins. I just want to see him dictate terms a little bit more instead of them coming to him and, you know, kind of waiting it out and seeing, like, bring the fight. Bring the fight. And I think if he did that, there would be, and I mean, that's an oversimplification, of course. I'm not saying like just immediately get out of your stance and go start attacking the player. It doesn't work that way. I'm not saying that, but he can dictate terms because he gets to his spot so quick. He'll get to his spot before the defender does. Now get there. Now go mauling. Go out physical that dude in front of you. That's what I want to see. I see just that from a dictating of terms standpoint. That's all I got for positives and negatives. Looking at the contract, I know we went over this yesterday, but just to kind of recap it, 4 years, $77 million. If he plays 1 year in Green Bay, it'll cost him $29.2 million against the cap. If he plays 2 years, it'll cost him $47.4 million or $23.7 per year. If he plays 3 years, it'll cost him $62.9 million or $21 million per year. And if he plays 4 years, it'll cost him $77 million or $19.3 million per year. A very big contract. There's nothing fake about it. It is going to be a big payday, no matter how you look at it, for Aaron Banks. How he fits in Green Bay, He's all in all likelihood going to be their left guard moving forward. He fits the offense and the scheme perfectly. I think he's really going to help unlock this run offense even more. He's a good run blocker, and just some of the movement skills and the uniqueness of what he can do, I think Matt LaFleur is going to be drooling over. Matt LaFleur is going to know how to utilize him in the run game, and he's going to use him in a lot of unique ways. The pass pro is more than good enough. I think he could be really good to even maybe great someday if he really focuses in on it, but he's still only allowed, what, 2 sacks in his career? A little bit of luck there to go with it, but in the pass rush win rate was right around what Zach Tom's was. So again, we're not looking at a bad pass blocker here, but there's so much more meat on that bone if he can kind of focus in on it. And in the meantime, just continue to be a really good run blocker. And last but not least is overall game is much, much better than Josh Myers. I think it's somewhere between Sean Ryan and Elgton Jenkins. I think he can be as good as Elgton. I really do. I think that's like that should be the goal this year, is to be, I'm not saying like that's a Pro Bowl level player. Like Elgton has not really been that. He's been a really, really, really good player for a long time. I think Aaron Banks can be as good as Elgton was last year in Green Bay at left guard. And now you're going from Josh Myers to Elgton Jenkins at center, which is a massive upgrade. So I do think there is a lot of real opportunity there. I think, again, he's going to be left guard, probably Jenkins at center, Zach Tom at right tackle, and then probably Rashid at left tackle, and then between Jordan Morgan and Sean Ryan at right guard. And I'll say one more time, I love the thought process of 6'5", 325, Aaron Banks at left guard, 6'5", like 311, Jenkins at center, and then 6'5", 320, Sean Ryan at right guard. I think those three can move some people inside, really open things up for Josh Jacobs and company. The big question is going to be, can he live up to that huge contract? My verdict here is I think they overpaid to some extent. I think they got a really good offensive lineman, upgraded Josh Myers in a fairly significant way. Maybe not a unbelievable way, but a fairly significant way. They got rid of their worst starting offensive lineman, somebody that graded as my lowest or second greatest offensive line, not offensive player period, in each of the last 3 years, and upgraded him to somebody who was going to, I think, pretty consistently grade in the positive. That's a win. That's a win. Whether it's a $77 million win, that's what he's going to have to answer through the course of his career in Green Bay. But after looking at the tape deeper, there was very clearly a lot to like about what he did out there on film. And I'm excited to see what he can do as a member of the Green Bay Packers. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it. For any of you, by the way, that have listened to this all the way through, 38 minutes-ish of nonstop. For the most part, we obviously had the little news and notes at the beginning, but at least 32 minutes on Aaron Banks and offensive line play. You are beautiful, beautiful people, and I love you with all of my heart. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for making Packaday what it is. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to nerd out for 30 minutes about a new free agent signing guard. That's the coolest thing in the world. So thank you for that. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handel, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Step Keep, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, and Jay Kohner. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.